And welcome to the Gaslit Podcast. And thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. This is episode 53. I've had some massive technical issues over here at the new Gaslit Podcast Towers next door to, obviously, to our main business here. Been setting it up, and I've done the little first anniversary podcast in the new little studio bit here. I've had problems with my laptop today. It's lost all the Wi-Fi. I couldn't find a USB 3 cable properly. The laptop wouldn't turn off, and then it wouldn't turn on. And so this is just going to be an audio only recording. So there's some more bits that I'm trying to bring together here at to making this little studio area a lot more sort of professional looking with the lighting and stuff like that. So super excited to show you sort of the end result of it all. But first of all, here's my friend Sean to tell you a bit more about the podcast. Thank you for listening to another Gaslit Podcast, the show to help DIYers, new people into the industry, and those who are wanting to expand their knowledge. Each week we'll pick a topic and go into details, and with special guests and listeners' questions answered, we will look forward to some of the conversations. So let's get back to the show. Right, thank you very much indeed, guys. So there's a couple of things I just want to run through with you. We've got some listeners or viewers' questions. Obviously, this is going to be an audio-only podcast, but if you are watching this on YouTube, you can actually get the video part of it as well. I do like to try and record it at the same time. We're looking at how we're going to get it onto Spotify, because Spotify are now starting to do the video side as well as the audio only side, which is absolutely fantastic. We use a company called RSS Feeds, which when we upload to RSS, it does all the podcast platforms, your Amazon, your Apple, and the Spotify and all the other all at the same time. So we're looking into that and how we can sort of bring that on board, because I think that's really, really sort of really, really important. So there's a couple of things I want to run through. So we've been hearing bandied around again in the news about the media are very, very good at giving you a little bit less than the full truth. Because, you know, never let the truth get in the way of a good lie, whatever the phrase is that they like to come out with. So there are some bits about gas boilers in 2025. And, of course, now we're in 2025. So we've been having some people getting a bit panicky about it. And it's all 2025 target is all about new builds. It's all about brand new homes being built and not having gas boilers. It doesn't affect anybody who's, you know, already living in a home, if it's already been built and you've got a gas boiler, that's not going to change at all. So the government are looking, the current government at the moment, are looking at the 2035 target of having no more gas boilers, which is another 10 years for sale. Here in Kent, we had reform coming through with Mr. Farage. I'm not political, and I don't want to get into any of the politics side of where we are and where we are sort of heading and going. But there's a couple of facts really to sort of point out. Nigel Farage, obviously, he's chomping at the heels of Labour, potentially wanting to get into. And if he does make Prime Minister in this country in a 3 years' time or wherever it is when we have another general election, one of the things that he said is that the net zero would actually be scrapped and they'll actually start again on it. He doesn't fully believe in the targets are achievable. And in some ways, I can see that. We're having a massive crash in the motor industry. We're just looking at Nissan have nearly gone bust, and they're looking at Honda and Toyota as a buyout, because the whole let's all go EV and it's actually not working. But everyone's been sort of fed this same narrative about sort of combustion vehicles. And there was just one little thing that actually I'll go back to. A friend of mine had a really old car in 2002. It was an old Peugeot 206, I think it was. And it was a diesel, 1.2, 1.3 litre diesel, whatever it was. And he just started a new job and he was doing a lot of commuting. And it was getting around 75, 76 miles per gallon. It was driving like Miss Daisy, the most efficient way you could sort of drive this old car. And it wasn't new to him. It was second-hand car back then. But he was still squeezing mid-70s to the gallon. And we've come on, so that car is technically 23 years old by today's standards. And I've got a hybrid car that we use for work here. So sometimes the car is a bit of an easier way of getting around, doing call outs or doing some sort of routine service stuff. And certainly when we're doing our commercial work and it's sort of quite far afield, and I've sort of been there before and I know what I need when I get there. So I'll take the car. And you know, if I really drive that carefully, I'm getting 40 to the gallon as a hybrid car. As a 2 litre petrol, and that's a 2017, I think it is, car. So we've really not moved forwards in our technology when it comes to efficiencies in motor cars. And we've got the, all these electric cars, and we're getting better ranges, and the infrastructure and the charging structure is getting better and better, but it's not keeping up with the pace of demand that the sort of the government want, and what we're going to do with people in HMOs, you know, house of multiple occupancy or blocks of flats. How are they going to, if we scrapped it all tomorrow, how are they going to move forwards? But it does make me wonder, in 2002, they produced a car that could do mid-70s to the gallon. And in 2025, with a combustion engine, we can't get nowhere near it. And I always think that, you know, this didn't have a catalytic converter, and it didn't have an EGR valve and a DPF, and it didn't have all this stuff to make it all green, but it actually used less fuel to do more miles. And now we're burning more fuel to do more miles, and apparently that's greener. So I'm not quite understanding how that sort of works on that side, but whether, you know, on a conspiracy theory level, is there been a bit of technology being held back to sort of promote other agendas? I don't know, and I don't want to get into it on this podcast. But when we start looking at the efficiencies of boilers and how we've come on with the Boiler Plus scheme, A-rated gas appliances, and we're up in the 90%. Yes, you know, we're on air conditioning side of heating and cooling, we can, on the heating side, we're up to sort of 350-ish, 400% efficiencies. If you go for an air source heat pump, go into water, you're around that sort of that 3-4. Some people are getting 500% efficiencies out of that technology. I think ground source is probably the most efficient on the renewables, but the amount of money that it'll cost you to either drill boreholes all the way down, or take up your lawn and then get pipework going up and down, and then sort of put the soil back over the top again. But that's really sort of the most efficient, but it's the most impractical in most situations. So this, going back to the topic of 2025, 2035, and they were saying we want to be net zero by 2050. And if you actually look at some of the government's words and they're using about, you know, they want greener energy, renewable energy, like heat pumps. And that like heat pumps isn't heat pumps. That's, you know, leaving the door open for a little bit of new technology that comes along. And I do believe that. I know there's a few people out there saying about hydrogen, and it's not really, it takes too much energy to get the hydrogen out and then to be able to sort of package it up to be used within the heating system. But we do have a lot of pipework that runs up and down every sort of road in the whole of the UK, and a whole infrastructure that over the last few years has been completely up, completely renewed for new plastic pipe, because, you know, the old steel pipes, but they hydrogen is actually one of the smallest atoms, so it'll actually start leaking out of very tiny, tiny little joints where the methane was quite a big atom, and it wouldn't leak out, and you wouldn't get that issue. So I do believe that the hydrogen will be an option in moving forwards. I don't think there's any silver bullet. This is going to work, and that's the only technology. I think there'll be various technologies moving forwards. But going back to the politics side, you know, if Mr. Farage, his party, does get in, then I could see those goalposts and those targets moving a bit further away. And if you really want to go down the rabbit hole of the conspiracy theories, as I'm washing out my yogurt pots to get them all recycled to tick my box at home, when we start looking at the amount of CO2 that's being produced by the conflicts around the world, you know, however you want to see them as, but you know, in Ukraine, with the Russia and within Israel and Gaza, just those two big conflicts alone, the amount of CO2 that's being produced within all the military trucks and the rockets and the bullets and, you know, taking away all the human casualties that are sort of scooped up in that as well, that is a phenomenal amount of CO2. And I'm still being told to wash out my yogurt pots. So, yeah, I'm a little bit on the sceptical side of all that at the moment. But let's just wait and see. So what have we been up to here at Gaslek? Well, as we know, I was working in the new little studio here. We'll call it the Podcast Studio Towers. I was doing that last week and we got the recording out there, which is great. And there's a couple of bits that I really wanted to bring together at the same time and we couldn't actually make it work. We run out of time. It was just too difficult to make it all happen as I really wanted to. But we sort of showcased our new little area here, which I'm really excited about. So we've been doing some more work in the downstairs on the mezzanine floor, extending that across, you know, getting the carpet tiles ordered and getting the handrails. So we've extended the office here, the office space up on the mezzanine, and we're getting this ready for when we really do sort of get up and running with it all. And all the storage downstairs as we move forwards with a lot more air conditioning works and stuff like that. Because when we've got to properly store the gas bottles and the bits and pieces that are associated with aircom. So we're going to do, obviously, make sure we do that properly and all above board as well. So, so that's what we've been up to there. Obviously, this week is the bank holiday. I'm recording this on bank holiday Monday evening. So this is about 8:15 with all my little technical issues. I'm too tired. I've been working all day today here over at the offices, getting some bits and pieces sorted over to here. It's been a very, very long day for us. It's gone over nearly 13 hours just today on its own. So next week, tomorrow, we got to pick up all the bits and pieces. So we're getting the boiler and the radiators tomorrow, and I've got the pipe work and brought all the bits together. So we've got a full heating system. We've got the whole Gaslek team on that over the next few days over in Maidstone. So the guy's got a warm air central heating system, and there's an issue with the boiler, but they're so, so expensive to get them replaced. So, and they're actually quite inefficient and create a lot of allergies with dust and asthma and stuff like that. So that's coming out, and we're putting a new boiler in. He's got a gas supply already there. So we're bringing that in, bringing it all together, and we're getting the whole Gaslek family together, and we're all going to be down there pitching him. I've got a few commercial jobs on. I think I've got 5 commercials on next week. Got some Hanworthy boilers to fix and to service. That'd be nice and interesting. Hopefully we can get some nice photos and put them up on the old social media all about that. We got some listener/viewers questions. So we had someone contact us about a slow running tap and to explain how to fix it. So really the sort of the questions that we need to look at really, and what I'll do like to ask is it all the tap slow running? Is it just the hot or just the cold? Is it just on one tap or one outlet? So if we've got just one tap, hot and cold running slowly, and another tap in another area is absolutely running fine, that tells me that potentially the whole of the water system is absolutely fine and it's really narrowed down to that tap issue. Now, when we've got the sort of the modern monoblock taps and they all come together, as they come through the tap there on the old little quarter turns, they have, most of them have like a little gauze on the outlet. And if you have a look, you might even see that you can, that there's a bit that twists off with your hand, or it's got little flat sides for a bit of a, like a spanner to undo it. These are normally like in a sort of chrome plated. So you've got to be careful not to damage it. So an easy way actually is to use the handles of a set of pliers because they're sort of covered in rubber. Give them a bit of a squeeze and to give it a little twist. And once you get that first little twist going, and what you might find, there'll be a load of debris in the end because it's like a little mesh gauze. And that's what creates like that aeration of the tap when it all comes out. It all looks nice and pretty. And it's quite soft when you put your hand under it. But that's all going through filters. And if any rubbish gets on top of those filters, then it all starts blocking up and it doesn't actually work properly. So that's what I'd say onto that. And obviously, if you did have a hot water was fine, or cold water was fine, hot water wasn't, just on that one outlet, then I'd be looking at maybe the hose. So a lot of these like monoblock taps have like flexible hoses, and if it comes up and it's a bit too long and they've done a bit of a curly whirly on it, is it kinked? So is there a bit of a pinch in the pipe? And that can cause it. Sometimes when we have a lot of pressure in the pipes and it's got a bit of a twist to it, and then it's actually holding itself open under pressure. And if there's a drop in pressure, that can then suddenly kink because all the pressure that was holding it out and now it's gone relaxed and it goes back again and it's got a pinch in the pipe. So it's actually really important on tap flexes not to leave them pinched and kinked because that will actually damage that silver braiding. And then they'll start to ping and snap. And before you know it, the little black rubber inside then starts to perish and then bop. Now you've got a massive water leak and it's all coming through. So slow running tap onto that one. Someone else gives a shout about a shower waste. Now, almost all shower wastes have like a filter. So where you've got your shower tray, and then you'll have that sort of chrome, typically a chrome sort of waste, and they'll sort of lift out and there'll be another little bucket on the inside. Double check to see if there's any hair. You know, if you live with somebody with long hair, I'm not being gender stereotypical here of, you know, saying about my wife or anything. But we're looking at someone with long hair that uses the shower. Hair does fall out. And if you've got short hair like myself, then it just typically will just go down a plug hole and disappear. But the longer hair sort of gets wrapped up and caught around things. And, you know, give a good few weeks, a couple of months of doing that, and you can get a bit of a hairball. And then a bit of soap gets caught up in it, gets a bit gooey, and that really does slow the old water flow down. So just take it off and then you'll see this like inner side trap and just lift it out with your fingers. So yeah, it's not a difficult thing. Sometimes they have like a little sort of flush waste, and if you have a look at it, you might have to go inside and you can just ping it up with like a butter knife or a sort of a big screwdriver and take it up carefully. Whatever you do, just do it careful because they do snap. And then that will give you access to the trap bit on the inside. Avoid using chemicals where you can, the strong acids and stuff like that. Yes, it will. Anything organic, it will eat it. So hair, it will dissolve. It won't eat the copper. It won't eat the plastic waste pipe, but it will start to melt and heat up extremely any cast iron pipe that you have when you start using the old sulfuric acids and stuff. So just be mindful on that. We've got another question here about a water tank dripping up in the loft. So we have a ball valve, typically it'd be a big arm and a ball on the end. So when we've got these things that are like dripping and dripping, so we've got a couple of things to think about. So we're storing up their water, which can be used for some cold water outlets. Like if you're just going to plan it out and say, right, we're going to have hot water on a tank and that's going to go off. And then we'll have another leg come off that cold water storage tank, going into the bathroom, going into the toilet up on the first floor. Typically, it doesn't normally go down to the ground floor for any sort of cloakrooms. Not normally. It's normally kept on the first floor. So you might have a toilet that's sort of just overflowing into the bowl itself, and then that's then obviously creating a water draw onto the tank, and then that's why it's dripping and dripping and dripping, because you're actually using the water. If you're finding the water level's rising, it's going out of the overflow, and that's just typically a ball cock issue there. And the easiest way, if it is flooding out, because the overflow pipes are never normally fitted that great, You might find there's an isolation valve to turn the water off to the tank. Certainly overnight when you're not using any water, just turn it off to make sure we're not going to get any flooding issues until you can get it either replaced by a company like us here at Gaslick for our plumbing services, or your local plumber wherever you are. Hot water too hot. That was another question. I didn't write down the names of these people there. I just got it down on a post-it note. Hot water too hot. Now, I did have a commercial place where the immersion would have actually exceeded its safety limits and started running away with itself. And we actually recorded, I think it was 97 degrees at the kitchen. The whole place filled up with steam. It was so hot. I found the heater, isolate the heater, and we actually got them changed over within a couple of days, but got the heater isolated because there was like two heaters on this hot water storage. So the first one was okay, but the second one had gone faulty. But so we drained it out and we changed both because they're both the same age. They're both, you know, one's gone faulty, the other one's probably just around the corner to do it. So we got that done. So when we start saying about, water too hot and scalding, obviously that's a very serious thing and we have to take it seriously because it's people's people's health and injury. And, you know, if you're a bit, let's say you're frail and you got scalded by some hot water, you could go into shock and you could bring on a cardiac arrest. So it's a very serious thing, very hot water. Just remembering your skin temperature is around that sort of 37, 38 degrees. So anything that's warmer than that will feel warm to the hand. So if you've got hot water around the sort of 42-ish, 43, 44 degree mark, that will feel quite warm. And then going up into your 50s. We want to store hot water in cylinders at around 60 for the Legionella side of things and from the water safety. So just be mindful that, if you've got some sort of temperature that you can Amazon sell them, little probes that you can just put into the water and then that'll give you a temperature guide. Certainly if you've got someone in your home that's vulnerable, you've got a child with additional needs that lives with you that operating the taps on their own, or if you've got elderly people that are living in under your roof, and you can just monitor the water temperature. Certainly if it's stored, combination boilers, not really too much of a problem because they don't really get that hot by the design of them. But if you start to store your hot water, it can have the time to heat up and to heat up. So just keep an eye on that there. So what else have I got written down here? This time of year, it happens every single time we get a massive influx of outdoor taps. Now, I would have thought every house in the whole of the UK has got an outdoor tap. But it doesn't cease to ever amaze me the amount of inquiries we get in for taps into the garden. And I just don't know where they come from. Do they sort of, is there an amount of people that actually take them all out in the winter and then sort of move and take them with them, and then someone else moves into the house and they now want an outside tap? It never ceases to amaze me how many people don't have an outside tap. But they didn't have it last year, and they didn't have it year before, and the year before, and the year before, and the year before. But all of a sudden, it's front foremost and really, really important that they get this outside tap done. So we've got some outside taps that we do. And all us old plumbers up and down the country, we all get the same phone calls as it's all coming in. This time of year as well, there's a bit of a peculiar one that does come in. And it's not that peculiar, actually, when you sort of think about it. We get a lot of problems, a lot of calls, coming in for no hot water. So what we can do is, like, during the winter, we'll have the... So if you've got a gravity system and you've got a three-port valve, or you've got a two-port, two twos, like an S-plan or a Y-plan. So what can happen is if you've got you've got two two-ports, S-plan, and your heating one is faulty, and because there's a micro switch and it moves over, opens, and then clicks the micro switch for it to work. Now, if your heating one's working fine and your heating is on from 6 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, and then when you demand hot water, it moves over but doesn't hit the switch. Well, the boiler's already on and running. So it'll heat your hot water up and then it will then turn off and then it'll come clicking around and it'll shut the valve. But you don't actually realise that the switch wasn't working or work in the hot water independently because your heating's been on. And the way we're storing the hot water, we might have it on for 3 or 4 hours in the evening, a couple of hours in the morning. So it's a bit of a slow, gradual warm-up on the hot water side, and we don't actually realise it. And then we get to this time of year, the heating goes off, the hot water's still on, and the hot water doesn't work. So that's a really common problem for us. And the same on the combination boiler side of things, when things aren't working too great because the boiler was already red hot when we was using it for the heating. Now we're not using it for the heating as much. Now it's starting to show these performance issues that aren't underlining issues to do with the hot water side, but being masked by the heating being on. So yeah, we'll get into that now. So we've had a really warm spell last week. I think it hit 29 degrees here down in the south of England, southeast of England. Certainly when I got up this morning, it was 6 degrees outside. And I did actually, I will admit and confess here, I will actually tell you, I actually did turn the heating on this morning indoors because it was just that little bit too chilly at 6 degrees. You know, it's only 5 degrees, a little bit less, you know, coming through. And if it rained, it would snow. So it wasn't that warm at all this morning. So we're starting to see that there's a bit of a cooler shift to the temperature. I think we got highs of 13 next week. So low teens as we're coming into low double digits as we're coming into next week. So we'll start seeing a few more calls come in. And you know, we're at the beginning of May. So I remember a good few years ago, end of April, it was snowing. So, and we did. I was meant to go and do something with a group of people, and it was cancelled. For the beginning of May, because of the snow may have not have melted from the little blizzard that we had. So it's, you know, it does go hand in hand, and obviously the media will jump up and down and people will fly flags of pulling different agendas left, right and centre. But yeah, we do have these little chemical, weather fronts and bits and pieces that come along. Anyway, so I've been going on for 27 minutes now, so I do apologise. Thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. From last week's draw, we're going to pull out the winners from that for the two vouchers, the £225 Amazon gift vouchers for the birthday celebrations, and we'll get those done and gone, get those emailed off to the lucky winners. But thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. Have a fantastic week. If you've got any questions, get them over to us at podcast@gaslect.net. Take care. Goodbye.